Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Now, you're very welcome back. So, a busy hour on the way. We're going to have the Galway captain, Sarah Dervin, with us. Galway beat Kilkenny in the league final at the weekend. Manchester United have taken the lead against Wolves, we should let you know. 18 minutes gone. Scott McTominay drilling the ball with his right foot into the far corner. So, they're 1-0 up away to Wolves after 18 minutes. In the meantime, though, we're talking to boxing. Delighted to say Eric Donovan is guest of honour. Andy Lee is with us as well. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Irish featherweight champion as of Saturday.
Yes.
Do you pig out and have some pizza and eat yourself silly for the next 48 hours, guilt-free?
Yeah, I was actually, throughout the training camp, there's always something that you long for, isn't there? Like, and a full Irish
it's
was
like,
what?
It's like a pregnancy, is it?
Yeah. Craving, yeah. So, full Irish was what I was after, and full Irish is what I got Sunday morning in my sister's house. Yeah, it's lovely. It's just nice. Nice to be Irish champion again, you know. 10 years, almost 10 years, 9 years after my last Irish title win or feat as an amateur. That was 2010, and that was one of my greatest years. That was my greatest year as an amateur. 2010, I won the national seniors, got best boxer of the seniors. It's formerly the seniors, it's the elites now, but you know, and beat the world champion that year. Then went to the European Championships, got a bronze.
Moscow.
So, yeah. I was in the top 10 in the world, number 3 in Europe, and everything was set for me to qualify for London Olympic Games. And you know, and I kind of had a good kind of a passage to it because I was seeded now, you know, and brought in the seeding and stuff like that at that time. But yeah, just now, just everything, the ass fell off it. But look, it's great to be great to be Irish champion again as a professional this time.
Yeah, it was Stephen McAfee that you beat.
Stephen
fourth
McAfee,
round
yeah.
Stoppage. Yeah. Fight went well from your point of view?
Yeah, it couldn't have gone better. You know, got a good few rounds in, I boxed very well, I was comfortable, handled the situation and the occasion comfortably. Even though there was pressure on me, you know, I'm not going to say there wasn't. It was my first main event, live TV, my biggest fan base, over 350 fans came to watch me. Like, they sold over 350 tickets personally, you know what I mean? So that was huge. I was up against a bit of a puncher, and you know, there was a lot.
It was punch perfect. Like, yeah. You know, in the biggest fight of your professional career against your best opponent, and you put up a performance like that. It was, it was something to behold, you know?
Yeah, I didn't want to just kind of, obviously I want to win, but I didn't want it to be a shutout, dull kind of a points win or something like that. I really wanted to shine. And I wanted to leave a lasting impression, kind of like, you know, on the fans that were there and TV viewers. And I did, got the knockout win, and, you know, can't wait to get back out there again.
And Kubla Fuckel afterwards.
Kubla Fuckel as well, yeah.
How much did you rehearse that or practice that?
Well, it's something that I've always been fascinated with, especially when I went to Kazakhstan in 2012 to box in the World Series of Boxing. And I spent 8 months out there. After about 2 months out there, I was really struggling because we had an interpreter who'd come around once a week. And when she came around, everybody else was looking for her. You'd barely get a chance to speak with her or get her to help you out or whatever. But there was a woman who owned a training complex, and her daughter was an English-speaking student. I went to her one day and I said, can you help me learn some Russian language? I said, just a boxing language so I can get by with this. With the coaches and stuff. And so I, you know, threw myself into it and I started learning some phrases, boxing language in Russian. And it just dawned on me when I was over there that I know more Russian than I do Oscar Elga, Irish language, you know. And ever since I met Laura, Laura's passionate about the Irish language, and Laura, my fiance, and she's a student teacher at the moment as well, primary school teacher. So I tried to learn a little bit, you know, as I go along, but especially for this occasion with the Irish title fight live on an Irish speaking station, I just said, this is a moment I might never get again in my whole life, you know, so let's, you know, try and own this moment and make it my own. And I thought it would be no better way than Kubla Fuckel.
It had an impact, I thought. It was nice. Yeah. You know, it was a really classy touch. Mm. And I'm sure they appreciated it as well, because, Andy, we've talked about it a few times, boxing, especially, I suppose, post-Regency, professional boxing in this country needs support, needs backing from media, needs sponsors, and TG Carr have got on board. So yeah. I'm sure they appreciate it.
Do you know what the craziest thing is? That I'm getting so much, like, everyone is congratulating me for the Cúpla Focal, for speaking my own language.
Yeah. Hey, look, I mean, I like my Irish would be embarrassing, and so I studied, you know, from, what, 4 or 5 years of age through to Leaving Cert, I couldn't have a conversation.
I laugh when you mention Kazakhstan, because I remember that I was living in London at the time, and you came over and spent a few days with me before you got the visa, before you left. And I walked you to the tube when you've gone to the airport to go to Kazakhstan, and you
laughed at me when I was going away. It was kind of that sinister laugh, going to Kazakhstan.
I really felt sorry for you, and I don't know, the look in your face when you were like a puppy being like abandoned or something. But those days in that camp in Kazakhstan, being away from home and not having any language and sharing a gym with the best boxer in the world. That must have been the making of you, really.
It really was. It definitely was. Because even when I came back from there and I realised that...
Just remind me what year that was, Eric.
It was 2012 to 2013.
Okay.
I went in October 2012 and I was there till May 2013. All of the other deals that the Irish boxers had with the WSB and the franchises that they were boxing with were deals where they could train at home and just travel to fight.
Okay.
So they could train at home in Dublin.
But Kazakhstan
wanted us there for 8 months. Like, they want you there.
Right.
And I even going out there, I wasn't in great shape. I thought, should I go out there and get into great shape? And it was the worst thing I ever did. Like, because you know, I was part of a team. My teammates were from the poorest countries in the world. Mm. They were all vying for position to fight. We got
hungry.
A monthly wage, which wasn't great, but they were hungry. They wanted to get picked to fight.
What was testament was that you were in the final team.
Yeah.
After all those fights and all those battles, and you know, they could have picked any of those boxers, but they picked you. You know, for your hard work, it was testing.
Yeah, it was. I felt like I grew up out there. I learned a lot about myself, because even like over 10 years, traveled the world with the Irish team, all my teammates, Billy, Zor, doctors, physios, everything. We all one big family. This time it was over in Middle Asia on my own with a foreign team, not able to speak the lingo and just trying to get by and not getting picked to fight either. So I had to really graft in the, because I was there for 2 months before I got picked to fight, and I was like, I started plotting my escape. I was like, I gotta get out of here. But that was when I came face to face with myself, and I said, how am I going to make this more manageable? Like, would I actually pick myself to fight for this team right now? I wasn't performing. I wasn't doing what I needed to do. So I started to kind of use I was getting a bit of counselling and stuff at the time, and I spoke about this before, you know, for my mental health and stuff, and I started trying to use the counselling skills and tools, positive affirmation. I tried to say, come on, Eric, you're a champion, you know, come on, get in the game here, you know, and I had to try and find a solution, find a way, and it was the Russian language was the one that I identified, where I could, maybe if I could learn a bit more here. And once I started learning a bit more, something as small as just leva, leva, prava, you know, the boxing language of numbers, I started to communicate a little bit better with my coach, on the pads even. Mm-hmm. Then in the restaurant, I was able to ask for my food and small, and now I was socialising with people and not isolating myself, because I was in the log cabin and I used to be really, really down.
Yeah.
Watching Breaking Bad, you know, and... you know, and I started to grow. I started to socialise a little bit more.
Often small changes can trigger much bigger changes.
Yeah.
Something as small as making your bed in the morning.
Yeah.
Set a tone for the day and change your overall behaviour in ways that you hadn't predicted.
Well, when I got back from there, I went back into third level education, you know, because I gave up on my education, my own self, at 15. And that the trip to Kazakhstan and what I went through out there and the growth out there, you know, gave me that, you know,
impetus to do it.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you about the giving up the education at 15, if you don't mind? Because anytime I've heard you speak or anytime I talk to you, like, you're just incredibly eloquent. Like, there's clearly brains to burn in there, you know, and there's a natural curiosity, I find, and you're a conscientious person. It just seems like you would have loved education, or you should have loved education. And the thought of you kind of dumping that at 15 seems like such a waste.
Yeah, I suppose it goes back to my family, basically. My mum and my mother and father, they didn't come from an educated family themselves. And to be honest, growing up, there was no emphasis or importance put onto education. Right. And I don't remember anyone doing work with me after school or, you know, trying to get things right. So even as a young kid going to school, my attendance wouldn't have been brilliant either. And every morning I would be hit with this belt of anxiety. You know, when you arrive at school, like, you know you're supposed to do something, or you're supposed, and you're always playing catch up and always left behind. And then because you were never in the game, like it was always I was always at a disadvantage. Yeah. So I never want, like, it was like, no, waste of time. What can I do? You know, so never really. Yeah, it was always an element of fear around it then, and a fear around authority then, and that, because you just didn't feel like you're on level par with everybody else. So I left it at 15 because I put all my eggs in one basket and just felt like boxing was. It's funny because I developed, even though at 15 years of age, I was 5 times Irish champion and a European schoolboy bronze medalist.
Yeah.
I was walking around school, my education was crap, but I was champion. I kind of felt like, you know, I'm somebody in school, you know, but I wasn't on level par as an academic. Yeah. And then I kind of said, well, I think I should, you know, what's the point of me doing this, you know? Yeah,
that's fair enough. I guess it's so tough if it's not being encouraged at home, and then if you fall a little bit behind and then a little bit more behind, how you bridge that gap. It only gets bigger every week.
Yeah. So, you know, my own son Jack now, he's 13 and he's a real scholar, like, you know what I mean? But I speak with him, you know, about how difficult it was for me, you know, that, you know, and I speak with him about even my entrance exam before I went into secondary school. The lads that I was hanging around with were like, Eric, whatever you do, man, don't get your questions right in your entrance exam. I'm like, what? Yeah, if you get your questions right in your entrance exam, all that's going to happen, you're going to get into the top class and you're going to work all day. I'm like, oh, really? So 2 + 2 = 5 and 2 × 5 = 11. And sure enough, I got into the class where my peers told me to go. But, like, again, denying my own intelligence as well. Mm. That's something you're stopped. It's not like that I could have been there, but you're purposely denying it. And yeah, so it's kind of conditioned in a way like that, but then broke the mold when I got back from Kazakhstan. I said, hey,
Eric, like, people see you now, you're so kind of accomplished in how you speak. Mm. You're an Irish champion as a professional, you're 8-0 as a pro, undefeated, and it seemed like, but you spoke about being your best year as an amateur almost 10 years ago, and then you just briefly mentioned the ass fell out of it. People won't, like, if people could see what you went through and the transformation you've come through. For me, it's amazing to see who you are now. When you said about the ass falling out of it and the places you've been, what do you credit that transformation to? Like, just go into detail. How did the ass fall out of it?
Well, I talk about 2010. That was my biggest year as an amateur. Actually, I boxed to qualify for Beijing Olympics in Chicago, 2007. Arrived in Chicago, win 3 fights, Eric, and you're going to qualify for Beijing. So I won my first 2 fights, absolutely blitzed the 2 opponents, Hungary and Dominican Republic. I was up against Valentino then, the Italian. Just beat this guy and you're going to qualify. And I let the whole occasion get to me. I couldn't sleep the night before in the hotel because I started thinking, a guy like me who's left school so young and, you know, come from where I come from, I didn't feel worthy of being an Olympian, you know, Olympian athlete or having that kind of status. And I started thinking about all the things that this could do for me, and I started kind of, yeah, in a way, kind of fantasizing about it. And I just got lost, and before I knew it, my head was in my hands in the dressing rooms and it was all over. And I let the occasion get to me. But I got back, you know, with the help of Dom, club coaches, and Billy and Zor, and I got back on track in 2010. As you say, it turned out to be a great year for me, and that was my best year as an amateur. And in 2011, a few weeks out from our final training camp for the Olympic qualifiers for London, I decided to go out with a few friends and have a blowout, as you do. Mm-hmm. And I had a few drinks, and went to a few more drinks, and I ended up going back to some house party, and I got into a fight with a guy and broke my left hand. And it was all over. Mm. Everything over, you know. And that was a time where I started to kind of feel like the way I used to behave, I was a little bit kind of a little bit off the rails, but I used to kind of put that down to a lot of things like education, you know, having no education, sure, coming from maybe disadvantaged background, or my dad leaving home when I was 6 months old. I used to project a lot of blame, you know, but when this happened, the kind of projection of the arrows and stuff turned around and came on me. And I felt very low because I was at a stage in my life where I felt boxing was the only thing I could do, and it was my whole identity. I didn't know anything else about myself. I didn't learn anything else about myself, and I kind of felt like I was a boxer, and I'm only a boxer, and the only thing that I'm good at, I'm failing at. And I got really, really depressed and really down. And that was not long after that, I had to ask for help. Ask for professional help, and from that moment, well, late 2011, early 2012, from that moment, from that year on, everything about my life has been, getting back on track, improving, developing. A lot of help from a lot of people, a lot of good people, but humility as well is very important. A lot of honesty from myself, because you can't change, no matter how. I don't know how to articulate this, but you cannot change something that you're not aware of.
You need to kind of confront it and admit.
I had to.
Because a lot of people, I like, honestly, myself included, my only understanding of counselling might be through watching things like either The Sopranos or In Treatment or seeing it depicted like in drama. So I don't know what the reality of a counselling session is like. Did you find it instantly helpful and think, oh God, I needed this, or was it tricky for a while, or how does that process work?
Like, say professional help, there's loads of different areas, like counselling as well, but there's also certain meetings out there as well where you meet like-minded folk as well, and that's very good because you can share with each other and identify with each other, and you kind of feel like you're not alone, and there's other people like you. And I just kind of felt like where I was, the way I was going, I was on a downhill slope. So I had to put the brakes on and say, hey, Eric, what are you doing? You need to stop and you need to change. And if you don't change, you're going to suffer grave consequences. And that's just the reality.
And did you seek that out? Did you realise that yourself, or was there somebody who advised you that, or nudged you in that way?
Funny thing is, I always went back to my club coach, Dominic O'Rourke. And, you know, I think club coaches out there, they're amazing people. They're absolutely amazing people. Like, Dom would have went above and beyond the call of coaching duty with me most of my life. It's funny because when I discovered all these other things that were cooler than boxing, I'd go away from the club and I'd be gone for a few weeks, and I'd be hanging around with the lads and the girls and doing, you know, wanting to just be a young kid, get up to Divilment or whatever.
Yeah.
Dom would always come down to the house, he'd sit down, he'd drink a cup of tea or whatever, he'd just sit there, he wouldn't really be coming in all guns blazing or pointing fingers. You know, he'd say, talk to me, what's going on with you? And I'd be like 15 or 16 years of age, I'm sick of boxing, I gave enough of my life to boxing. I'm like,
it's where you're 50.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I'm sick of sacrifice, I've won enough, I'm happy enough and all. But he had a great way of saying, like, you know, tell you things like you're gifted and you're talented. He'd say things that, you know, I wouldn't have heard before, like, you know, and he had this way of instilling a belief in you. And he'd also tell you that the people that you're with, they don't got your back, you know, they don't have your back. And like, when the bell goes, you're on your own, what are they going to, you know? Stuff. And when he'd leave the house, you'd be back up in the mirror shadow boxing. He had that way. Yeah. And you'd be back in the club. But to say he'd done that 100 times would not be an exaggeration.
Right.
And I just think that, I don't know if I could do that if I had a young boxer. Like, I'd probably say, look, I'd wash my hands of him. Yeah, yeah. But he'd done that because he's a leader, and he's a good man, and he's not because he wanted me to win titles for the club. It's because he cared about me and he wanted the best for me. And I think, you talk about teachers in boxing and that, there's very few of them around anymore. Like, being a coach is not just about holding up pads or not only blowing a whistle. It's that stuff that people don't see.
Totally.
And he's the one that I turned to when she hit the fan, and I was really at a stage where I was like, I did not want to be here anymore. Dom was the one I turned to, and he kind of put the wheels in motion and helped me to introduce me to the right people. And ever since then, I haven't looked back.
What was the return to adult education like? Intimidating?
Very intimidating. But it's amazing how we can,
demean ourselves.
Put ourselves down. Because, like, when I opened my mind to it and put in a bit of effort and commitment, you know, I was like loving this. You know what I mean? Like, because I grew up with a fear, and it was probably an unrealistic fear of authority and education and stuff. So I was like really shaken. But once I got in, I realised third level education, you're on a level par. I'm treated as a human being. I can speak with the lecturer after classes, and I can go up and sit down and have a chat. He'll help me out. He'll send me an email, or she will. And I said, this is brilliant. Here's people that want to help me. You know, as a young kid, I used to have so much fear in the classroom. I never wanted to, like, come on. A young kid is not going to put up the hand and say, I'm inadequate, I'm incompetent, I'm useless, I'm struggling here. Because we're human beings, we're built for survival. Mm. And I developed coping mechanisms to get through school. And those coping mechanisms would take the mick out of other people that were doing well.
Yeah.
Just so I could, which showed levels of insecurity or gravitate towards people that were like me, so I wouldn't feel alone. Looking back now, you can see how we survive. That's how we survive.
It's
we develop.
It's like textbook coping mechanism, isn't
but
it?
But if you could just put that, like, we can't go back and put that head that we have now onto, you know, but it's amazing how I can look at my life and see and piece it together and see how it was.
I honestly think after the year you had before this fight, the injury, wasn't much going on for your career, that without those experiences through Kazakhstan, through fighting, through counselling, you wouldn't have persevered.
No, probably not.
You wouldn't have persevered.
Yeah, for people who might not realise, so you turned pro in 2016, mid-2016?
2016, yeah.
2017 was beautiful. Like, I remember you were on after beating Di Davies and you won the Celtic featherweight.
In my fifth fight, beat the Welsh champion, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, 2018, because you're 33 now?
33,
that's,
yeah.
That's right. Let's beat the clock here a bit. Let's skip a few rungs in the ladder. Yeah. 2018 is going to be big. Yeah. And then, whew, halt.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, how it happens. And when it happens, like, to you... it wasn't just the injuries as such, it was the financial burden of the injuries, because...
So what was a frozen shoulder, I read?
Well, it started out with a hand injury, index finger, and I used to keep getting a shock in the index finger. It was, according to the surgeon, the consultant, he was saying it was ligament damage. And the trauma of every time I would punch, I would get this starting pain up into my forearm and right up into the shoulder. And this happened for several weeks, and I'd let it rest for a while, but then it would go again, and then subsequently the shoulder started to pain me, and they reckon that was triggered from the pain, the trauma from the finger.
Right.
Not sure, but like even the surgeon that I spoke to in Santry, Ruth, I can't think of her surname, but she even said 33 years of age, you have a frozen shoulder. It's highly unusual for someone so young to have a frozen shoulder. Right. Frozen shoulder is just aggressive inflammation in the shoulder.
Right.
Like, you cannot lift your shoulder, rotate it or anything. It's very, very frustrating and really, really painful. There was three different stages of therapy. One was a steroid injection, some rehab, and, you know, anyways, if one doesn't work, you go to two, and if two doesn't work, you go to three. The last stage of therapy was surgery, and that's where I ended up.
Did you?
And
I didn't realize it's surgery.
So I got surgery, you know. So, and then,
like, 33, wrap it up, kid.
Yeah, do you know? So,
well, even before the surgery, you were questioning, is it worth having this? Because there's no guarantee, even after this, that my career will get moving again, or even if I'll ever make a full recovery. Mm. But
yeah, I said to Leonard, my manager, to be fair, I said, look, Leonard. I said, look, it's going to cost me a lot of money for this surgery, because I didn't have health insurance. I had some sponsors by physios and I didn't think I'd be in a position where a physio can't fix my shoulder.
Yes.
Do you know? And when I was boxing for Ireland, everything like that was covered for me.
So you're totally on your own here financially.
Yeah, so my sponsor, I had a couple of sponsors who really helped me out. Liffey Crane Hire, they were very good to me as well. And so I got it done, but I said to Leonard, before I get this done, Leonard, can you, you know, I've nothing, I'm going in to get this surgery done, I haven't even got anything in the pipeline, like, and he said, Eric, look, all I can say is if you're fit in 6 months' time, that I get you an Irish title fight and the big fights and live TV fights, and he's been true to his word. Right. I've got it, and now I'm Irish champion, and I had my first main event, and want to push on from there.
I didn't realise it was that precarious a situation, or that difficult. Like, that's going to test your resilience, as Andy's saying. That could finish you off. Like, that would be, on a whole host, like, even financially, the stress of that?
Yeah, it was tough, like, because I kind of felt like even I was up and down to Santry, and sometimes when you go up and down there, like, you know, you might not even be getting a big job done, but you might be having a meeting, and sometimes that meeting can cost £200 or £300. You know, and it's every time, like, as a professional boxer, you're making the only time you make money is when you fight.
Sure.
But when you're not fighting and you're going up and down you're just handing out money and stuff like that. I didn't really mind. All I wanted was my shoulder to be better.
Okay.
Because there's nothing as bad when you're a professional boxer and you can't punch.
I'm no expert. do you know,
you can't punch. You're like, what?
So anyway, the shoulder when you get to fight and you start working with Kenneth Egan and Joe Clifford.
Yeah.
Tell me about that relationship and working with those guys.
Well, I text Ken a big long message asking him to help me out. I'm very fussy when it comes to coaching and stuff like that, because I don't really just want to work with any particular person. And a lot of people might think, why Kenny? He's no professional background or experience. But Ken was trained under one of the best coaches in the world, Zorantia, and so was Andy, and so was I.
Yeah.
And even though we had that same education, I've had that education under Zor. I can't apply that to myself as a I can't coach myself. I can't be in the ring and outside the ring at the same time. So I thought, well, Ken is a southpaw, Olympic silver medalist. I get on well with him. We have a good relationship. He got the same education as I got under Zor. He's a lot to offer me. If he can help me out, it'd be great. And maybe we can look at adding, making an addition to this team, someone with a bit of professional experience. And a good friend of mine, Conor Ahern, who is a former Irish champion as well. He's a friend of ours. He's a very good friend of Joe Clifford. And Joe Clifford is a very competent cup man. He's a cup man coordinator. He does the cup man courses for prize fighting, for MMA, for, you know, mixed martial arts, the boxing, etc. And he runs courses. He's done them on all the continents around the world. He's been a medical man at World Championships, European Championships, Olympic Games in Rio even. He was a member of Aiba's team, a medical background team. And I just rang him up one day. It's funny, you know, I got his number off Connor, and Connor suggested him to me, and I rang him up, and it's like we were speaking for about 45 minutes, and I was asking him would he help me, and he was just saying he can't wait to be a part of it. Like he loves, he said when someone tells him their dream of and their ambition, he said it makes him feel alive inside. And he got that from me. And he said, I love something like that hunger, that ambitious, you know, I want to be part of something like that. Mm. And ever since, the three of us have been banging our heads together. And look, it's working. It's doing well. Right. And I'm just thrilled to have them in my corner. Joe's really, really good. He's brilliant. And Ken is brilliant as well. And we work so well together.
Mm. Mm. Is there any... No, I don't want to. You don't want to read it. Was there any ever, like, it's very hard to serve two masters. It's impossible almost. And those guys would have definitely different schools of thought in terms of how boxers should or how boxers should act in a ring. Was there any ever issue with that? Or,
you know, it's like Billy and Zor. We were on the high performance team. Billy and Zor. Billy was the head coach. Zor was the head technical coach.
Yeah.
Ken has been my coach from the start. We brought in Joe, so Ken is in the corner. He's kind of like, if we were to put numbers on them, like Ken is there first, so we'd say number one, Joe's number two. But I don't look at them like that. I look at them as my team, and they work so well together. And I think Ken is also dealing with this brilliantly as well, because he wants to learn from Joe. Mm. He wants to learn more about the professional side, and Joe wants to learn from Ken about the high performance, about the quick punching, the feinting, the, you know. And it's funny. It's actually so interesting to listen to them teaching each other.
Mm. It's and then collaborative.
It's so collaborative.
Because I saw a quote from Kenneth Egan, and he was saying, Eric's not a big puncher. He knows that himself. He's not a banger. He's not a knockout artist. We all know that. So what does he need to do? He needs to really polish up on his boxing skills. Because people might think, well, you're in the pro ranks now. You're going to be focusing on power and trying to develop a knockout game. Whereas actually, that sounds almost like you're polishing up the amateur skills that you have.
Yeah, still the fundamentals of boxing, isn't it? Like, it's still Ken's a genius at knowing how to, you know, that punch that I brought the fight to an end with the other night, Stephen McVeigh, that's one of Kenneth's signature punches. Yeah. It's a punch that I love as well, but Kenneth would have stopped many, many men in the amateur game with that punch, wouldn't he, Andy?
It hurt me a few times with it. I know it well.
Yeah, to know. And there's a lot of Irish boxers that would have sparred with Kenny, and they'll tell you about that as well. Okay. So even in the pad work and training, we were working on that punch.
Like, I'm not going to say he was as happy as you, but he was a very satisfied looking man after the fight, especially with the punch that finished it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Gorgeous, he calls it. Yeah.
And are you guys getting together a few times a week,
we had our first. That was my first full official training camp. Do you know, since I've been a pro, I've been working with so many different people, even Andy at one stage, Jerry Story, Dominic Rourke, and you can't develop when you're working with so many different people. You got to be working with. And what I love about Joe and Ken as well, when I got the two of them, when we had our first meeting, they asked me, what was I doing? I said, well, I'm basically training myself. I'm organizing my own sparring. And then, stop, they said. we'll take all of that off you.
Do you know, I'm glad to hear that, because I do remember speaking to you, and I thought, you know, at the time you were looking for sponsors, and it was like, I need to get, and almost you were trying to think like a promoter as well. Yeah. And I do remember thinking, this guy's taking on way too much. Yeah. It would be lovely if he could just focus on the boxing.
Yeah. The next day, I think it was 2 days later, I had an email in my email address, and it was my 10-week training camp for my next fight. And Joe broke it down, and this is what we're going to do, and this is where I knew where I needed to be. Mm. They told me when I was sparring and when I wasn't sparring. And I remember once or twice saying to Joe that, I don't know, I might have mentioned something about how I'd like to do something, and he said, no, we'll tell you when you're sparring. You don't decide that. And do you know what? I said, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I never had that authority. I never had someone to take control. And I said, that's exactly what I need. Mm. And I just followed suit, and you know, it's working well. Like,
people are talking about a tilt at a European title, and Kiko Martinez, who, I don't know, it feels like, is there an Irish fighter who hasn't fought Kiko Martinez? Like, is this guy not retired yet? Seriously?
He's a part of the Irish kind of fabric at this stage now, isn't he?
So he's European title holder, and I guess that's your ambition. Is this for you, like, there's no massive payday that's going to like change your life on the horizon, or is that part of the ambition, or is this more
really
a vocation? Is this a vocation that you just need to do this?
It's more about redemption, you know. I kind of felt like I had a serious talent for me from a very young age, and I knew that I was different. I was different from all the rest from a very young age. For the first 50 fights that I had, I think I was undefeated or something like that. And
it's hard to live with wasted talent.
Yeah, yeah, and then. So I felt like I was given a gift, you know, a talent, like, you know, of boxing. And then throughout my mid to late teens, right up to mid 20s, I kind of abused that in a way that I didn't realise at the time, but I was a bit lost in myself. And the guilt got to me about that, like, and right now it's about having no regrets and a bit redemption, that when I get to the end of my career, when I do close this story and finish up and hang up the gloves, I want to be able to say that I rectified it as much as I possibly could and gave it my absolute best, 100%. You know, because not many people can actually say they did that. Like, I know so many people that who have finished their careers and they never really found out how good they could have been or how good they were. And I feel that I can actually get to the best place in my boxing career than I have been, you know, earlier on, midways through it.
It's funny, and it's not just because Andy Lee is sitting in the studio beside you, but as you were talking there, I sometimes think of you, and I'm sure every fighter, every professional sports person has big regrets. How could you not? But you at the end to be a world champion has probably made the next 50 years of your life much easier.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to persevere, and you've done that, and that's like, no matter what happens now, I know it's not the biggest prize in boxing, but that was a special night on Saturday for you to win that that title in this fashion that you did, and also have the moment where you brought your family into the ring after.
Yeah.
That must have been a great feeling.
Yeah, it is. And I want to show Jack and Troy, I want to show my kids that, you know, what it takes to be successful in life, you know, hard work. You have to, anything you want, you have to go out there and graft for it. You have to really earn it, like, you know. And for me, that's what it's about as well, because one of my favourite things to do is to travel around speaking to secondary school students. I share my story, you know, I do a life story talk called Aspiration Becomes Reality, and I share my experiences and my strength and my hope with schools, with businesses. And even last Friday, I was over in Nace Rugby Club, like, sharing with an after dinner talk. And you'd never think I was a week out from my Irish title fight. These are the things that I have to do in order, like, you know, to live as well, you know, to earn some money and to get by. But it's like I said, it's something that I absolutely love doing, and I feel like I've been given a great opportunity in my life to, with the life I'm living today, I feel like I'm living a blessed life. I want to pass on the positive message, and I feel like it's my purpose in life now, to, because before I didn't feel like I had a purpose in life. I feel like, what is my role in life? Like, now I love helping people.
It's funny, Philly McMahon, the Dublin footballer, you should catch up with him.
I know Philly. Philly was privy to one of my talks, actually, in Mountjoy prison with the prison staff, and he was very complimentary to me afterwards.
Well,
yeah.
He's talked recently about, I think he got chatting to a guy in the street and was able to help him out. And like, not to put words in his mouth, but I think he was saying it's almost like just like a bomb went off. I can't get enough of this helping people, and it's like a sense of purpose. Yeah. They're absolutely parallels with what you're saying. And where are you? Where's your education, or where's all that going?
Well, I graduated with a diploma in 2015, and I was going to go for a degree, and that was counselling, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah, that was when the seed came back the box, and I'm not finished here. Like, I was retired for 3 years, but it's kind of like, hey, you know, Eric, I think you've more left to offer boxing, and the conclusion was that I can always go back and do my education. I can't always go back and box. So yeah, turned pro in 2016, and my focus is there now. I do some fitness classes in the Thai, and a lot of fitness programs for schools and sports teams as well. I work with a football team in Leash. They're a senior team, Courtwood GAA club. They're actually, I worked with them last year for the first time, and I'm loving being involved in a team environment, you know. I bring something different to it, like, you know, but it's involved in sport, and I absolutely love it. But then I do the talks in the secondary schools and businesses and wherever. I could be anywhere. I was doing a talk in Thomond Park in a box in Thomond Park for a company there only a couple of months ago, right before a big game. You know, called me in, I did 20-30 minutes sharing a life story, and you know, it was great, and I loved it, like, you know.
And where can people get in touch if they want to have you speak?
Yeah, they can get in touch with me and social media, any of my social media platforms.
Cool. So what's the plan now? What's the route?
I said starting out that I'd love to fight for an Irish title. I've completed that, and now I want to, you know, push the bar on European title. And I said the other night, I don't want to be one of these people that's putting pressure on myself or putting deadlines on myself. The reality is I'm in a good place. I'm loving training. The hunger's there. I'm enjoying boxing. And wherever it takes me, I'm here, you know, I'm ready. But I would love the European title. I would be absolutely content and over the moon if I could get a European title out of it. And I think I can. I really do. I genuinely believe I can. I know the Mark Vidal, Sergio Prada, these are all Spanish guys. Hey, Antonio Gago. At my weight, featherweight anyway, the Spaniards seem to have
there's the belts. There's a bit of a resurgence in Spanish boxing at the moment.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the guys are...
I've seen them all, I've watched them all. I think I can... And I'm not being big-headed when I say this. I think I have the beatings of all of them. All of them. So, Leonard Gunning is my manager. He's going to have to make it happen. Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah, great. I mean, I guess it should be doable. Spain's not a million miles away.
Spike O'Sullivan said a great thing. He said that, you know, at the other night in the National Stadium, it reminded him of the Bernard Dunn days, you know, when I was there for the main event. And I thought that was a really high praise, nice compliment, you know. And I would have been there as a young kid watching Bernard as well. And for me to walk out there in main event and see the stadium 80%, 90% full, you know, was a very special moment.
I'd say so, yeah. Do you get an extra buzz now it's on live national television?
Oh yeah, huge. Yeah, huge. Absolutely.
Sense the cameras around?
No, I didn't let it get to me as such in terms of like a nervous way. I kind of embraced it and said, yeah, go and do what you do, you know? I'm a champion and I always have been a champion, and prove yourself, prove yourself now to the nation, how good you really are, you know. So I kind of used that kind of attitude.
Extra shot of adrenaline. Yeah. It's funny, I was reading quotes from when you did do a little bit of work with Andy back in the day, and you were saying, he taught me how to work in close.
Yeah, Andy did, yeah, and Joe's helped me with that
so
now.
So explain that to me, I've never fight far away or in close.
Yeah.
Far away sounds easier.
Yeah. See, professional boxing, you can't get away from it. You have to be able to learn how to fight close, because as an amateur, over 3 rounds, you could probably run, but box on the back foot for 3 rounds, and you'd be conditioned to do that. But if you're boxing over 8 rounds, 10 rounds, or 12 rounds, your opponent's going to get to you eventually. You can't say you can run, but you can't hide. Eventually, you're going to have to meet with your opponent.
With the fight with McAfee at the weekend, was it a conscious decision to go to the body from the start?
Yeah. Teddy Atlas says, put water in the basement.
That's eventually what got him in the end.
He showed me, like, because he had really, like, you could see the mean intent, you know. He was really trying to take me out. And I knew he would, because on terms of boxing, on a boxing level, we're different levels, you know what I mean? And I knew that he was going to try and take me out. But when he was trying to do that, he brought his elbows out and he showed me the window. So just just touch him down there, straight left hands, you know, and then.
Yeah. And what are the key things with fighting in close? Like, what is it that Andy passed on?
Well, what Andy said is when you're in there, that you have to remain ultimately calm and confident in your own ability. That when you're in there, you're not panicking. Because sometimes when a person goes into that pressure zone, right in front of somebody, they can do crazy things. Lift their chin up in the air, open their defense, try and come out, point it, whatever. You just, when you go in there, you have to be calm. Know where to hold your hands, know where to keep your chin, and watch what's in front of you. It's almost like you're trying to slow down a fast version of a highly competitive fight into slow motion. And when you get to that place in your mind, in your head, of that ultimate emotional kind of confidence in yourself, you can actually bring it down. You can actually
I'm
slow.
Glad you remembered all this.
Yeah, but you can actually slow down the fight. You know,
for boxers like me and Eric, who would have been technical boxers as amateurs, and going into professional game, it's a completely different thing, where they will get close to you. And for us as amateurs, and even into, me for a certain amount of time as a pro, when someone got into that distance where they were close to you, there's an internal panic, like an anxiety that builds up, and you just burn up so much energy. And the only action is to either tie them up and hold.
Yeah.
Or just wait until it's till you can get the distance away from you.
Yeah.
And you never really, like, you have to make a conscious decision to deal with it and put yourself in those uncomfortable positions where you're in close, and most hopefully in sparring you'll go through that.
Yeah.
And learn how to be comfortable in those moments of which is chaos. You know, when you're in close, and learn what punches to throw and how to tie a man up and how to be relaxed in there.
Breathe, I would think, is less
important. Breathe is so important as well. But like, not to breathe and
don't tighten up on the shoulders, because that's that's the biggest burner of energy of anything. Just because when the anxiety comes and the panic comes inside, you'll tighten up, and then everything that you do, every punch you throw, is stiff and slow. And so it's always remind just to check your shoulders. Always remind yourself, even when you're moving around, just to check your shoulders and relax.
Joe's reminding me of that now as well, and he's also reminding me of my facial expressions. He'll give out to me if I show a tired facial expression, and it could be in round 10 on the bags or pads, and if I show a tired facial expression, he'll give out to me, wants me to
poker face,
relax, smile, laugh. He wants me, you know, when you think of it and you change your attitude to it psychologically, you can help.
But they say even smiling releases feel good hormones anyway, like it does have a physiological effect on you.
Yeah, because like when you see a person like who's showing this absolute pain in their face, then that's how that may be how they're feeling. Their weakness is there, you know?
Yeah.
Little things like that. It's amazing. The more I learn, the less I know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You begin to understand how ignorant you are. The more you go on. I never thought of the energy burning aspect. I mean, I could understand the tightness of your punches, but even just that it would burn up energy.
Of course.
Tense,
And the punches coming out slower, and just, and like breathing when you punch. Because, you know, the thing is, you'll get in close with somebody, and then that's the sound you make when you're punching hard and tight.
Yeah.
And it's just about being relaxed and just psh, psh, psh.
Yeah.
So simple. Like,
in saying that, there's like punches, sounds there's like murderous that. Punches coming your way, and you have to kind of stay calm in those moments, like, and just find peace in the chaos. That's what you have to do.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah. Peace in the chaos,
if you master it, that sounds like a bit of heaven.
Yeah, the funny thing is, I felt safe in the ring. It's outside the ring where I used to struggle.
Yeah.
So, no, for a long time, in the ring was my haven, you know? Outside was like, wow, let me back in there.
You must have got pretty calm. I mean, you fought yourself out.
Yeah, but only, like, only learned that in the later stages of my career. You know,
that one Adam Booth thing?
Yeah, with Adam,
Was it?
Emmanuel's thing was always keep the fight long. When they come close, tie him up. But you can't always do that, and you can't do it for 12 rounds, certainly. So I had to develop that. Mm. And there were fights and times when I took fights and just practiced on those things in a fight situation.
As in a lesser opponent or someone you knew you'd beat?
Yeah, I won't mention the guys because I don't want to disrespect them, but there were times when I just took rounds and worked on things, you know. And
interesting.
You don't always have that. You don't always have the luxury of doing that.
So sometimes if we were on the radio saying, geez, Andy, in the 7th, your man was all over
him.
Fights
that were closer than they should have been. But you always feel like you have a bit of control about it. Yeah.
Sounds like you need to do a bit of coaching.
Well,
he has so much to offer.
I can imagine.
Yeah, he has so much to offer.
It's finding the time and the
commitment,
energy.
Though, isn't
time
it?
And energy. Is, like, the coach has to be as committed, if not more, than the fighter.
Yeah.
And Eric was a perfect student. and we had a great time together, but I just couldn't offer him that time and commitment, and I wouldn't be doing him justice by not being there in the gym, not being able to be there for him. So that's it.
Listen, we've gone way over time, but it's been brilliant having you in. Congratulations.
Been exercising.
An Irish title, yeah. And I just think the way you speak as well about your own story, about mental health, like just to come on and casually talk about things like counselling or your own issues so eloquently and without any fear of stigma or worry is just brilliant.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I actually think it's important that we should,
you know.
It's so important. Like I did a mental health event in CIT in Cork a couple of weeks ago, and the event was hashtag stigma is silly. Sure. And it is silly. You know, let's try and, you know, call stigma silly, you know what I mean? Because it's in the day and age that we live in right now, and from my experiences of chatting to students and schools and all, the amount of positive, overwhelming messages that I do get from people afterwards about how my story has helped them, it makes me want to keep doing it, you know? If I wasn't getting this type of reaction, I would probably stop. But it's helping people. People are actually saying, Eric, you don't believe the impact that you've had on my life with that few words that you've said. And I'm like, wow, it's amazing, you know? It's absolutely amazing.
See why you get a buzz out of it.
Yeah.
I have to say, I think we're in a pretty good place. I think you'll get nothing but positive reaction even after this interview. I don't think the stigma, I mean, I'm sure it's there, and people are afraid, certainly in work, to come out and say, I've got issues, and that's probably an issue, the next level. But I don't think there's a stigma in the sense of people are now going, geez, what's up with your man?
Yeah.
That's gone. That's decades old, it feels like, at this stage.
Yeah. And I think there's a fine balance to it as well. Like, I try to teach, like, kids as well, we don't want to be kind of mollycoddled either to the level of, like, everything's an issue, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like that's important. Like, we need to have some sort of resolve and resolve and resilience as well. And I talk about how rejection is necessary. It's absolutely necessary. Failure is necessary. We have to experience these in terms of growth. If we don't, and then suddenly we're hit with this rejection at 20 years of age or 19 or 20, then how are we going to deal with that? You know what I mean? It's important, like, from a very young age that they get to experience these things, losses, whether it's sports, whether it's, in school, sometimes falling out with a friend, making back up, little things like
the
that.
Skills.
It can affect, the skills, absolutely. The skills and the tools, we have to equip the kids of today with them to serve them well in the future.
Okay, listen, top man, when are we going to see you back in the ring?
Looking like July, but it'll probably be abroad. I'll probably be going to maybe somewhere in the UK or something for a 6 or 8 rounder just to kind of keep ticking over. But my next big fight will be back here in September in Ireland. Hopefully top of the bill again.
Great.
And on TV again. And we'll kick on and push towards that European title, yeah.
Okay, magic. Listen, Eric Donovan, legend, thanks so much. Loads of messages coming in for you.
Thank you, Joe.
It's been great having you in. Andy Lee, believe it or not, everybody, is starting a Game of Thrones podcast. Your opinion of the level of geekery you're about to hear in a few moments' time is quite stunning. We're going to take a short break and he's going to tell us what we can look forward to. back in a second.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.